From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in West Menlo Park.
Haight-Ashbury.
I live in the Western Addition.
Bernal Heights.
San Bruno.
I live in Pacific Heights.
Coming up, we'll hear from Bay Area residents about how police shootings have affected their lives.
If I come in contact with a police officer, it's a flip of the coin, you know. Heads I live, tails I don't, and hopefully it comes up heads.
Then what the closure of a recycling center in West Oakland means for the hundreds of people whose income relies on it.
If Oakland's shopping cart recyclers aren't entitled to our trash, then what are they entitled to?
And we'll hear about the very specialized job of keeping animals out of the way of airplanes.
If they won't leave, then I'll have to go in and get a shotgun, scare them away with that.
It's all about the environment we live in today on Cross Currents. The San Francisco Police Union has come under criticism for publishing a controversial photo in its monthly newspaper. A photo in the August edition shows a pair of Labrador retrievers, a black lab with a sign around its neck reading "Black Labs Matter," and a white lab with one that says "All Labs Matter." In a comment to the San Francisco Chronicle, the force's Sergeant Yolanda Williams said of the union, "Reforms aren't going to happen until you get them to concede that they've been doing things wrong. And this does not look like a concession or even an understanding or a desire to understand." As we approach tomorrow's 2-year anniversary of Michael Brown's death in Ferguson, Missouri, we wanted to hear Bay Area perspectives about racial justice in the United States. We've partnered with the East Bay Express, who invited people to share their personal reflections in their weekly. Today, we're sharing one of those voices. Writer Laron Barton, who says he struggled to stay true to himself as a black man.
My name is Laron Barton. I'm originally from Kansas City, Missouri, but I live in San Francisco, California, in the heart of the TL. There was a time that I thought that, you know, if I acted a certain way, that, you know, if I talked a certain way, if I dressed a certain way, then I wouldn't be looked at as the aggressive black man. Is, you know, I wanted to be the acceptable Negro, but I just, you know, honestly, it was just one point that I just said, you know what, look, I'm who I am, I'm gonna be looked at like this, and that's it, and that's why I wrote this. The title of my essay is "You Are Doing Nothing Wrong." I cannot go a day without watching the news or reading a report stating a young black male or female has been assaulted, brutalized, shot, or killed by a police officer. The usual explanations are, it looked like he or she had a weapon, or the go-to, I was in fear of my life. Every moment we breathe, our life is on the line because of the color of our skin. Some may say, well, if you just said sir, or ask, were you doing something that you shouldn't have been doing or somewhere you shouldn't have been? It's as if our blackness immediately signals trouble. Our elders will tell us to behave properly or act a certain way to avoid the white glare, but I am here to tell you, we are doing nothing wrong. Our lives, our mere existence on this planet causes discomfort, aggression, and contempt. Ever since we've been brought to America, there has been a level of malice directed towards the black man and woman that can only be equaled by the treatment of the Native American. Why are we hated? I have no idea. But I do know changing the way we dress, the way we talk, act in public, or walk around in this world will not matter. Being black is automatically being a target for harm, and I don't want any black man or woman to blame themselves for the way the world sees or treats them. It is not your fault. I wanted this to be published so that people can read it and say, you know what, he's right. Like, you know, we're not doing anything wrong. Like, you know, we shouldn't have to put away our Golden State hoodie or our baggy jeans just to survive. I mean, that's kind of sick, right? You can dress any way, you can talk a certain way, you can behave, but at the end of the day, you are black. And if I come in contact with a police officer, it's a flip of the coin. Heads I live, tails I don't, and hopefully it comes up heads, you know. Like, I mean, you know, that's just the way it is.
That was Laron Barton, one of many Bay Area residents who wrote into the East Bay Express in response to ongoing police violence against black people. The piece was produced by KALW's Lucy King and Justine Lee. We'll hear another perspective every day this week. This is Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hannah Baba. Local Black Lives Matter activists have called for support on another issue, one that will affect homeless people in Oakland, the closure of Glass King, formerly known as Alliance Metals. It's a recycling center in West Oakland that serves roughly 400 daily walk-up recyclers, and it's set to close on August 20th, unless supporters of the center successfully petition the city to intervene. The center exchanges $5 million a year with recyclers, according to the owners. But it's also amassed complaints from neighbors and tens of thousands of dollars of fines, mostly for obstructing the sidewalk with recyclers' shopping carts. Supporters of Alliance Metals launched a petition last week asking the city to, quote, find a compassionate solution and grant the center extra time to relocate. They were galvanized by Amir Soltani, whose film Dogtown Redemption documents Alliance Metals, the people who rely on it, and the pressure of the gentrifying neighborhood around them. KALW's Jen Cheehan spoke with Amir Soltani after the debut of his film last April.
So I think that this movie does a wonderful job of showing the depth of the humanity of people that often get passed over, you know, as we spoke about, invisible. And it's kind of a sad commentary that we need to rehumanize people who are human. And was that something that you explicitly thought about from the beginning of making the film?
I was as much interested in the economics of it as in the humanity. Because you know how everybody talks about the survival of the fit? Dogtown Redemption is about people who are defying Darwin. You know, by any measure, they should be dead. By any measure. And yet they survive, you know? And in a way, they embody so much of what we as the members of the middle class or upper class, whatever, fear, right? What happens when you lose your home? What happens when you lose your family? What happens? What happens? What happens? That's what happens. And still, there's humanity. There is humanity in that recycling center. Do you know what I mean? That's encouraging. That was very hopeful for me. But it's also, you know, you just see the question for me, the economic question is, what are we as a society offering the poor? What are the ways of reintegrating the poor into the economy so that they can afford housing, so they can afford these things? And when you actually see how capable people are, not people who are super functional, but just barely functional.
And still able to get up and work every day.
Get up and
work.
That
struck me that this is a job.
Exactly.
People work from morning till evening and do things like pull loads of 800 pounds just
right.
With their own bodies.
And as manual labor, all of these kinds of work shift out of America, we've got to be thinking about, we're either going to have a third world, we're going to have a third world in America. Everything is being robots taking over, the middle class. You know, these aren't just personal stories. There's a sort of structural thing that's taking place.
That was filmmaker Amir Soltani speaking with KALW's Jen Cheehan about the people who will be put out of work when the recycling center Glass King, formerly Alliance Metals, closes this month. The city of Oakland agreed to waive $17,000 of fines on the condition that the center close for good a week from Saturday. You can find more information about Amir Soltani's film Dogtown Redemption and the controversy around the recycling center at our website, kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hannah Baba. Now we'll head across the bay to a different kind of environment. San Francisco International Airport is built on dozens of acres of wetlands, and it's home to many species of birds. Unfortunately for those birds, it's also home to many, many airplanes, and someone has to try and keep these flying creatures and flying objects away from each other. Producers Casey Miner and Leela Day tell us more in this episode of The Specialist.
320. It was 1529. Bird strike. He lost all engine. He lost the thrust in the engines. He's returning immediately. It was a bird strike. Can I get him in for runway one?
We can't do it. We're going to be in the Hudson.
I'm sorry. Say again, Cactus.
I think he said he was going in the Hudson.
The crux of my job is to prevent, you know, bird life from taking human life.
I'm Casey Miner, and this is The Specialist. When U.S. Airways Flight 1549 went down over the Hudson River in 2009, it wasn't because the pilot made a mistake or ran out of gas. It was because the plane ran smack into a flock of Canadian geese.
You know the story. Captain Sully Sullenberger landed the plane on water. All 155 passengers were safe, and he was a hero.
This is producer Leela Day, who's been listening to air traffic control radio chatter for months now.
What happened over the Hudson is really rare, but planes hitting birds is not.
And even when it's not that worst-case scenario, wildlife strikes still cost the airline industry close to $1 billion a year. That's grounded planes, repairs, putting disgruntled passengers into hotels. Airports know this, so a lot of them hire someone specifically to keep animals away from the planes.
At San Francisco International Airport, that person is Natalie Reeder, also known as...
I think I get Snake Lady a lot because reptiles and amphibians are really my specialty.
She's the airport biologist, and she's got a partner, Airfield Safety Officer Barry Davis.
They call me the Birdman, they call me Wildlife One.
Every day, Snake Lady and Wildlife One head out to combat the many tiny threats to the many giant machines carrying the many, many people at SFO. The two work as a team. Natalie, the biologist, trying to think of ways to keep animals off the runways, and Barry is boots on the ground. We jump into the van that looks like a giant yellow brick. Barry's behind the wheel and Natalie's in the passenger seat. They've got a radio and a couple special tools that we'll get into later.
You know what? Bring your... Do you have some earplugs?
Yeah.
Grab some earplugs.
We're going to spend the next couple hours driving around the airport's acres and acres of tarmac. Right away, we start seeing birds. I'm feeling a bit like I'm on a safari, trying to spot animals.
We've got a horned grebe sitting with some lesser scop.
And here's one of the mammal traps right here.
It's a large wire cage on the ground, filled with cat food.
It's called tomahawk trap. It's a live trap. They usually catch raccoons, occasionally skunks, but usually raccoons. And then they'll just take them and release them away from the airport.
Skunks, raccoons, snakes, rabbits, gophers, rats, those are just some of the animals that hang out at this airport. And by the way, other airports have to deal with bigger creatures. Deer, boa constrictors, even a sleeping moose on the runway caused a crash one time in Alaska.
Oh my God.
Yep. Oh my God. No moose at SFO, but that doesn't mean there's no excitement. As we drive, Barry and Natalie point out a dog kennel they keep nearby. Sometimes passengers' dogs escape from their crates and run onto the tarmac. This happens a couple times a year.
Woof!
Thanks, Redwood 906, taking off that contact marker.
Barry stops the van near a large wooden trap holding a black bird that's frantically fluttering around.
Can't see the bird. So that's a starling. There's a European starling in there. Starlings especially can form these huge, huge flocks, you know, and they can be a big problem.
So that starling that's in that trap, what happens to it?
The integrative pest management will come and euthanize it. Those bird species sort of fall into the same category as, you know, rats and other pest animals.
When Natalie tells me about the starlings being euthanized, her mood sort of shifts. She's a biologist, right? And she loves animals. Keeping them safe is part of her life mission. So she does feel conflicted about this. She wants safe flights, safe birds, and safe passengers.
I kind of look at my job as, you know, we might never eliminate the use of lethal take.
Lethal take means killing a bird.
But I look at my job as trying to find ways to minimize the necessity of it.
So why does a bird or any animal even want to hang out here? I mean, it's so noisy, there are fumes. I can't imagine that it feels like a safe and cozy place to be.
Well, a big part of it is the food. Hundreds of little rodents call these small grassy patches between the runways home.
Oh, of course.
Yep, snacks trump everything. The birds are willing to tolerate a lot to get what they want.
Kind of run around and hunt. Is the hawk up there?
Oh, the hawk's up there.
Barry just got a bunch of perch deterrent installed up there. And again, the behavior of these species.
Perch deterrent. Barry points to an airport antenna that's been retrofitted with small metal spikes to keep birds from perching, but it's not working.
But just look where he's standing. He's standing on that one little vertical piece.
So wait, he's just hanging out between the spikes?
Pretty much. He's kind of balanced himself on the one tiny part that's not going to stab his feet.
Amazing.
That's pretty hazardous behavior because he's sort of flying around this area and both of our landing runways are on either side of him.
Barry stares at the eyes of the hawk like a hawk. He's been an aircraft mechanic for 30 years, a flight instructor for 15, and has a bachelor's in aeronautics. He knows exactly what happens when a bird hits a plane. Some of the birds know him and fly away at the sight of his van, but not this hawk. In this kind of situation, Barry starts trying other tactics. He'll sound a siren first, and if that doesn't work, he's got the wailers. The wailers are loudspeakers lined up and down the grassy areas in between the tarmacs. They go off automatically a couple times a day. The sounds are sirens, birds of prey, coyote sounds, and guns. They're supposed to make the birds fly away immediately.
Sometimes the wailers will fool me and I'll look around looking for whatever bird's making that sound and I realize it's just the speakers.
The wailers may sometimes fool Natalie, but unfortunately, the birds don't seem to pay them any mind. So they've got another weapon, the decoys.
You can see our coyote down there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I do see it.
They're plastic coyotes that are set up in the patches of the grass on the runways. Barry even made some leg attachments that twirl around like a windmill to make it look like they're moving. They've even fooled a couple of pilots. But again, the birds aren't scared at all. You can see droppings on the coyote's rump. And right above our heads is the same red-tailed hawk, the one that was perched on the spikes like he was daring them to do something, still circling around. Barry gets serious.
I would go ahead and pull this out.
It's called a bird bomb, a little orange pistol that he aims in the air.
And what we'll do is we'll have a little blank here.
He loads a blank shot into his gun. It's not a bullet, just loud.
And we scare him away.
Barry uses the bird bomb every day.
If nobody will leave, if they won't leave, then I'll have to go in and get a shotgun, scare them away with that.
Yeah, you must have a very good aim.
We go to the range.
Yep, the shooting range. Barry, along with law enforcement and some customs agents, are the only people who are allowed to have guns around planes. Basically, his job is to scare the shit out of this hawk.
You're going
to
give him so many tries, you know, times to stay away, and then if he really starts hovering around the approach path, then we'll use the bird bombs to try to scare him off, and he'll usually leave. But if we really start to get an influx of hawks, like we've had like four or five that have been hanging around, you know, then we might have to take one, but it's last resort. It's not like we go out here and go hunting every day.
For today, we let the hawk be. Planes hit birds at SFO about 10 times a month. Natalie and Barry know when a bird goes down because the mechanics often find them. A mechanic may see a bit of blood on a wing or a part of the aircraft, and these marks are taken very seriously.
We provide as many mechanics as we can with a, what we call a SNARGE kit.
So SNARGE is tarmac bird kill.
SNARGE refers to basically the remains of an animal that's been hit by an aircraft. So that can be anything from a bunch of feathers to an actual, you know, pieces of bird to just a blood smear.
If they can't ID the bird easily, the mechanics use the SNARJ kits to swab the blood sample. Then they send it to the Smithsonian, where the DNA is analyzed. Yep, the Smithsonian. That's because the FAA keeps detailed records of the types of animals that are killed. This is to help protect the animals, but more importantly,
the liability.
Barry tells me about one time when Air France tried to blame SFO for a bird strike.
Like the A380, the ones with Air France, they said that they had had that bird strike here in San Francisco. So after we send the DNA, the SNARJ, back to Smithsonian, they said that that bird was native to France only. So it wasn't our bird. They had to strike when they left France. So it wasn't our bird.
1857, line up for weight on one right. 711, cross runway 2 left, contact ground.
You might not think so, but most of the birds they find are intact. And that's why they have the next thing they show me, their dead bird freezer.
So this is our freezer. So all the carcasses that the airfield safety officers pick up around the airfield come back here. And
the birds are all in plastic bags. A stiff goose is on top. It's heavy, the weight of a massive uncooked turkey.
So this is a goose, a Canada goose.
For a brief moment, I imagine this goose being sucked into a plane engine as we're taking off. That's when most of the strikes occur, during takeoff and landing when the birds are flying low. A bird this size getting stuck in a spinning engine fan could mean instant engine failure. When I see this bird, I'm thinking about my life. But Natalie's also thinking about the bird's life.
It hurts every time because when I see an animal, I don't just see the carcass. I think about, you know, oh, this bird might have had a nest, or this bird might have had a mate, or, you know, this bird was just, you know, flying around enjoying the sunshine and then got hit by a plane. It always, you know, bothers me to the extent that, you know, I wish that we could prevent more of it from happening, either them getting killed by planes or them getting shot because they're posing a hazard to planes, because those two things are the same thing.
So, Leela, you got to see one other trick that airports sometimes use to keep animals away. Can you tell me about what you saw?
They have all sorts of tricks, but one that I heard of was that they use falcons actually to attack the birds of prey that are lurking around the grass. And so at one point, SFO had this team of people to come and bring these falcons to present like how this would work. They let the falcons go. The falcons flew away, never came back. They never saw those falcons again.
Wait, like never? Like when was this?
This was like a year ago. Gone. Flying with the planes.
That's Leela Day and Casey Miner in an edition of the locally produced podcast, The Specialist. That piece was sound designed and mixed by Seth Samuel, who also wrote all the music. If you want to see Snake Lady and Wildlife One in action, we've got a video. Check it out on kalw.org. That's also where you can subscribe to The Specialist podcast. Our specialists today include Hannah Baba, Lisa Cantrell, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Jürgen Klemm, Allison Levitsky, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, and Syra Trejo. Today's show was engineered by James Rollins. Line producer was Liza Veal. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Our managing producer is Julie Kane. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet.
You're just too marvelous, too marvelous for words.
This is the voice of Jenny Ferris. She sings regularly all over the Bay Area, and she just so happens to be one of our heroic KALW volunteers. Take a date to catch her at the Sausalito Seahorse tomorrow. She's on at 7:30. And of course, you can join her company as a KALW supporter at any time. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Trefney.
You're much too much, and you're just too, very, very, too ill. ever be. The bee in Webster's dictionary. And so I am borrowing a love song from the birds to tell you that you're marvelous, too marvelous for words.